Welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. Take a look behind the curtain of professional hacking and hear compelling discussions with guests from diverse backgrounds who share a common curiosity and passion for challenges and their job. And now, here's your host, offensive security professional, educator, mentor, and author, Philip Wiley.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Philip Wiley Show. Today, I have Ron Neeson joining today. We met during RSA. Actually, it's kind of an interesting story because my CMO, one of her former colleagues, works for Entitl, and he wasn't able to be there to meet me, so he invited me to the dinner. So, unfortunately, I got to meet Ron Neeson and some other interesting folks at the dinner. It was one of the highlights of the dinners that I enjoyed, that I attended there at RSA. It was a lot of fun. So, welcome to the show, Ron.
You got the second best. Dean's always our leader, and then when he isn't available, I fill in.
That's good when you have the CEO back you up.
Thanks for having me, Phil. I'm really excited to get started.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So why don't we start out with sharing your background, kind of how you kind of got started into the industry, you know, education on up to like what you're doing today?
Of course, sure thing. So where should I start? I actually grew up in Dallas. We just did that 1+1. You're also in the area. And then grew up in Dallas, moved to Israel in high school, and enlisted in Unit A200, which is an intelligence unit in the Israel Defense Forces, and did cybersecurity there for many years. I like to joke that I don't add a lot of diversity to the Israeli founder pool. It's very much cookie cutter, right? Everyone went to the same units, or at least say they went to the same units. But did cybersecurity there for many years, and research development, that kind of whole side of things. I used to say low-level development, which means kind of like, you know, more detailed development. But then I realized that people think low-level sounds like mediocre and not like, you know, more detailed development. So I stopped saying that. But anyways, did development for many years. And that's when I met Avi, my co-founder. We're both really great friends. We managed to squeeze in a trip to Vietnam right before COVID. We were super, super lucky. Came back right before the skies shut down. But when we finished our service, we knew we wanted to do something together. You know, we knew that there was a lot of opportunity, and permission management had a kind of appeal to it. I think, honestly, between us, like, it's just that it felt weird that everyone was starting companies around all this next gen AI stuff. And like the most basic stuff of like an admin having too much access is still uncovered. And that's what the major compromises or attacks that happened, you know, in Uber and Okta and many others over the last 2-3 years were all like very basic stuff. Some developer, some IT guy having too many permissions. And basically we tried to figure out what we could do there, because it's not a new problem. It's something that Bank of America had 30 years ago. And we were fortunate. We spoke with a lot of security professionals. And honestly, we reached out to IT and DevOps guys originally between us. It's funny to say this on a podcast between us, but it kind of feels intimate when I'm talking to you. We spoke with IT guys. We're like, oh, well, you know, we'll talk to them and then they'll introduce us to the security team. But we asked them what their challenges were, and they spoke to us about permission management too. And that's kind of when we realized that permission management has two sides to it. One is governance, which is kind of the more visibility, retrospective interrogation, least privilege, access reviews, compliance. That's kind of more stereotypically the security hat. And then there's provisioning, which is the operational day-to-day. Like, you join a company, what is the process that you go through to gain that access? You change positions, you need access temporarily. There's some sort of process in place there, whether it's an onboarding, offboarding process, or a change management policy as to how you get that access. And that process was very manual, even in the most forward-thinking companies. A lot of really large cloud-centric companies developed internal solutions to automate this process. And that's kind of when it really hit us that the more conservative, kind of hardcore access management solutions that we're all familiar with just weren't really a fit for cloud permissions and cloud organizations. And that's kind of what led us to what we're doing today. So that's kind of a quick background, but I'll pause real quick because I long-winded answer.
Sure. It's interesting how that space has evolved, because, you know, when you mentioned it's some of these less complicated things that people see, like configurations issues, is usually where threat actors get in through you know, can all sorts of things like that are very basic. And it's like pen testers. I know one of the ways that people get a foothold a lot of times is just finding simple credentials that a developer has shared, put on his shared folder, that are maybe a, you know, a shared folder, his personal folder, and anyone has access to it can get access to those credentials. I've got an interesting story where I have a good friend of mine and former colleague. He was doing a pen test for a school district, and he had done the pen test for the school district a couple different times. They weren't remediating the items. They wanted the credentials. They wanted the passwords that he was able to intercept during the pen test. They told him, really, he kind of warned against that, but he said, okay, if I'm going to give these to you, you need to put them somewhere secure. One of the students of the school found that along with the pen test report and gained access to everything. He had a blueprint on how to hack all this stuff. Someone else already did it. It wasn't remediated. Here's all this stuff. And it wasn't like it was a big hack for him to get into it. He had a blueprint for it along with the credentials to do that. And I think sometimes people really think some of these hacks are really elite, you know, elite hackers that are doing this stuff. And it's sometimes opportunistic, and you need to really reduce the opportunities for these potential threat actors.
Wow, that's an amazing story. I have actually a similar story, but we'll save that for another day. And how, yeah, we'll save that for another day.
So what you're doing though is, you know, a lot of companies have IAM products or processes and, you know, and PAM, but it's interesting that I guess a lot of these legacy type of PAM products probably only addressed the on-prem environments, I guess.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what where we're at today and what we're focused on and what we've learned basically is when you look at even companies that have bought IGAs like SailPoint or privileged access management tools, you look at who buys that product and it's often the corporate governance person in the company. And that person often, it's not priority for them, the AWS environment or the databases or the dev infrastructure inside the large companies. And so the permission management infrastructure for these very large companies often covers their corporate stuff, but doesn't really cover their dev stuff. And when I say dev, I use that kind of, or cloud, I use that very widely, right? It's even just the SaaS applications, even Salesforce, right? Sometimes it's even integrated just because that's perceived as like the cloud side of things, the SaaS side of things. And so basically what we realized, and that was one side. The other part is that permission management projects are renowned or notorious for dragging out indefinitely and companies never seeing value, right? It's like a 2-year implementation time and an indefinite amount of COGS. And basically OPEX, what we realized is that by taking a cloud-centric approach, we're able to provide a lot of value out of the box. So quick time to value, quick implementation is something that's kind of unheard of in the permission management world. It's everyone's used to buying with multi-millions of dollars through Deloitte or something. Not that I have anything against Deloitte, but that's just kind of what the world was used to. And when we come around with a cloud native approach that's simple to deploy, then all of a sudden you are able to resolve the issues that are in a cloud environment in a much more natural way, in a much faster way. So yeah, that's kind of how what we saw.
So you also do on-prem as well?
Yeah, and well, I think it's you know, I'd be naive to say that the whole world is cloud, and that's kind of the be all end all. The world is a bit more, or organizations are more complex and nuanced than that. Every company has an on-prem environment and cloud. A lot of companies have an on-prem environment and cloud environment, and what we've been focused on is providing very, very quick value out of the box for your cloud environment. Your on-prem environment, we can support too. Like we have an SDK, we have infrastructure, we have kind of an open API. You have an on-prem deployment too for compliance reasons. That's often important to companies. And it's just that, you know, it's kind of both, but for the cloud side, we provide very quick value. And then for the on-prem, we do it so that you can add your applications and maintain a centralized source of truth.
Very interesting. And I would assume too, from, you know, being cloud-based, cloud-centric solution, that, you know, you're going to have your configurations and all that for your solution backed up to the cloud, whereas some of the solutions that are totally on-prem or on-prem focused, then you have to make sure to plan that for your business continuity planning and disaster recovery in case something happens. You don't want to lose that database and the configurations for your authentication.
Yeah, well, Philip, I'll give you another concrete example. Updating the system, right? Like updating an access management tool. You see companies walking around with access management tools from 20 years ago because the update process is so complicated. And again, by creating a cloud-centric approach, you get a lot of the benefits that we all are familiar with in SaaS applications, but to your permission management infrastructure, which, again, I think that I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, the ease of updating is good because I remember solutions from the past, not necessarily access management related, but sometimes it's just more of a hassle. You have to basically reinstall. In a lot of cases, people aren't updating because they don't want to have to go through the headache of reinstalling their solution.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So as far as, you know, some of these solutions are very expensive and not cost effective or, you know, accessible to other companies. So how accessible is your product to different sizes of businesses?
So we cost between $2 to $3 kajillion, depending on this. And that's kind of, the beauty of a cloud-centric approach. We take the pricing model we're all familiar with. I think a lot of tools, again, it's upfront implementation costs and then pricing per integration and then per resource and kind of a ton of different caveats. We've been religious about keeping our pricing very simple on a per-user model. And that way you have a lot of clarity as to, you know, what this is going to cost you. How does the rollout look? And you're able to silo your rollout as well. A lot of our customers choose to begin with a narrow rollout, maybe start with their customer success team or their dev team or their admins, and then expand from there as they see value and then kind of be able to manage costs accordingly. That and also by maintaining a cloud-centric approach, we're able to keep our own costs low. Like, we don't have a lot of upfront implementation costs. We don't have a lot of professional services we need to sell with every implementation because you can do it yourself. There are guides, and obviously if you want, then we'll help you. And our customer success team is freaking awesome. But Elad does amazing work there. But just the ability to manage it on your own, like we're all used to. I think one of the companies that we've been learning from a lot is Okta and how they became leaders in their side of the world in the authentication space is providing a cloud-centric, simple to deploy solution to an industry where, you know, Active Directory was kind of the be all end all. You needed like a 7-person team to manage that tool. Okta came around, built a simple to use solution. Now you can, you know, one IT gal can do it in the backyard of while she's on vacation. And that's kind of the idea, is bring that same ease of use to the permission management world.
And it seems like one of the advantages too is, say, like, if you've got support, you had an on-prem solution, sometimes getting vendor access to that environment, a lot of cases they have to come on site unless they get some VPN access, but at least with your solution, you know, they have access to it in the cloud and makes it a little easier to provide that support than just a solely on-prem solution.
Yeah. And like, you know, again, you can install it on your own. It's like a Helm chart or Terraform, simple to deploy, one-liner, you have it up and running. And
very interesting. So for someone that wanted to start a career in IAM or PAM, someone is wanting to be like a practitioner role, what is some advice that you have?
Wow. I wish I could have gone back and talked to Ron 3 years ago before he got into the access management space. It's like, the more we get into it, the bigger we realize the world is, this challenges of access management. It's just, it is freaking huge. It's insane. It's probably one of the most biggest and most complex aspects of cybersecurity and IT. And I think that for curious people, that is amazing because there is a endless amount of knowledge and endless amount of stuff to be learned and expertise to be built. But I think that if you're looking for kind of an easy way to become a security leader or an IT leader, then that's probably not the place to start. There are kind of other places where you can get your footing, but permission management, you know, there are some leaders in the industry that I respect immensely just because of their experience. To go back to your question more pragmatically, I think that networking and talking with other leaders of the industry has helped me a ton. And what I've been fortunate to learn is that people are very open. People are very happy to explain and teach and help because they're all empathetic. They were all were there. I was there a few years ago, you know. Every leader in the industry, every person that has gotten very far and now leading huge teams, they still have that empathy. They still have that excitement of teaching and staying on the cutting edge. And so, you know, for us, I reached out to some of the most prominent leaders on LinkedIn and just asked for their help and guidance. And they were really, really happy to, I mean, even you, like, how did you, just like you said, like, we were put in touch and I've learned a ton. And these types of relationships cultivate and expand and really drive your network over time. It also becomes a flywheel, right? You meet one person, then introduces you to another. Those two introduce you to two more. Those two introduce you to six more. And all of a sudden you find yourself that, it's a friendly, very friendly and intimate community. You go to Gartner IAM or Identiverse, or you see these are conferences that, like, people know each other. People go from booth to booth and say, "Hey, David, how you doing?" It's like, they go to the conference year over year. Our product leader has been to Identiverse, I think, like 10 times at this point, just, you know, every year. And so it becomes a somewhat of a family, and people reunite in Vegas to get drunk together.
Yeah, it's amazing how there's a lot of people spend a lot of effort into networking on LinkedIn, but they don't take it to the next step in person. And, you know, while online is critical, you make some initial connections, but it really seems like until you really start getting to meet with these people in person that you really start to see the real value. I mean, it's just really hard to connect with people in person online, because during the pandemic, I did a lot of virtual presentations, spoke at a lot of different conferences. And even when I worked for a vendor last year, I did some demos of their product at some of the IONS events. And interesting difference between the virtual and in person is just amazing, because no one's really asking questions online, but you get there in person, you're able to connect with people, you're able to read the room and see who's interested, and just the connection you make in general. People that come up and speak to you after you give a presentation or workshop or something, or just being at an event, people coming up talking to you, the connection that you make there, that's just a lot more difficult online.
Totally agree. That's why I've been flying around a lot. Every person that's willing to meet me, if you guys are listening to this podcast and want to meet me, shoot me a message. Happy to take you out for drinks.
Yeah. So look forward to seeing you again at Black Hat. So that's coming up pretty shortly. So you guys plan to have a booth there or events?
Yeah, we have
or
a booth. We're hosting a dinner. We're going to some shows together. So, I mean, Phil, you and I are going to go, but everyone's kind of welcome. Shoot me a message, and happy to invite you to all the events that we're sponsoring and putting together.
So yeah, it's pretty, you know, going back to the topic of authentication and stuff, it's amazing how the management of that has evolved, because whenever I started my career in 97 as a sysadmin, everything was decentralized. I remember when, like, the Code Red virus and NIMDA came about, the remote access tools, you could just RDP into a system. There weren't any kind of tools that you could push patches down or go in and try to clean the systems without actually accessing the system. And then when you throw in the picture, Unix and Linux authentication, you know, some of those aren't so easily to manage remotely. So even the authentication piece, and, you know, that's one of the big sellers with one of the things that really helped Microsoft was back before Active Directory, it was a little more difficult to administer privileges and stuff. And now once Active Directory came about, it was easier. So it's nice to see that the world's evolving into something that's more easy to administer, but also seeing the solutions, third-party solutions such as yours to administer the authentication and privilege access management.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, as an attacker, you're always jealous of those days, right? Like, you know, we'd be reminiscing on the days before there was memory and all these things that are important for the world in cybersecurity. But to your point, I think that we're in the middle of another kind of generational shift in the access management, permission management, authorization, authentication space. A lot of things are changing very rapidly. I think much thanks to a lot of other innovative companies in the space, you know, Teleport did amazing work in the authentication space for developer resources. And I can give plenty of other examples, StrongDM also in that space. And you have companies that are more on the other, the kind of permission management as a service, building it into your products like Plain ID and others. And you have this generation of products that are just making it much easier to manage permissions correctly. And I think that's rooted in the fact that people understand that the basis of any security program is a good permission management posture or program. And it's kind of like the last level of security, right? The most basic, what can you access is, you know, in the Army they call it need to know, but in the real world, it's basically the understanding of what is your blast radius, right? Things are going to happen. It's just a matter of what is the risk associated with what is going to happen. And the more people have access to more resources, the bigger the risk. And as companies take on themselves to own more and more information, especially in the age of AI, where owning information has become a huge resource, it becomes something that you need to protect even more. And so accessing that data, accessing those permissions, those sensitive applications became really huge. The other thing that I think is changing is the whole dynamic of privileged access management versus cloud security versus identity governance versus administration. And like, these are all different pillars, right? Even ITSMs, like they're, if you draw like a Venn diagram, I always joke that it looks kind of like the Olympics, you know, like where there's like one that's connected to the other, But if you think like the two ends, if I ask you like, what's the relationship between ITSM and cloud security, you'd be like, not so much, but it's like ITSM to administration to governance to PAM to what, and then you draw that line and all of a sudden transitively you've gotten from one side to the absolute other. And the reason I say all that is I think that forces us as vendors to be very collaborative with each other, because as a buyer, when you're a company and you're looking at how do I want to build my stack, you know, they're often, as historically I'd say, like, hope it's okay, I'm name dropping companies, but like, hopefully they'll pay me for my free marketing that I'm giving them. But, you know, if you look at, you mentioned 97, right? You looked at like, what was the stack of a company in the early 2000s? It was, a user management tool like Active Directory and Kerberos. And then you had on top of that, an IGA tool. I think like Avexa were big. Maybe that's a little bit even before Avexa's time, but like, and then you had on top of that a privileged access management tool. I guess today's CyberArk is one of the big ones. And when you look at what that stack is going to look like in 2030, I think that stack's going to look very different, even in terms of like what are the different categories. And you see that with like Okta building out workflows, and you see that with Active Directory building out privileged access management. Everyone's kind of expanding in their spot. I think that where that leaves us as a startup is really interesting as well, because that gives us the opportunity to really help define this new category and hopefully emerge as leaders, right? Because it's rolling the dice all over again. It's a shuffling of the chairs. The companies that were crowned as leaders in the last decade are now having to prove themselves almost from scratch, and that gives a lot of opportunity for startups to really prove themselves and work their way up the ladder.
Yeah, one of the things I see as advantages too is be able to administer those environments. Because back when it was just Active Directory that you were managing your environment with, you know, you had to understand Active Directory, how to set up users and stuff. You could create, you know, scripts for people that work on the help desk, or some companies had IAM teams where basically all they did, because the company is so busy, they were creating IDs, decommissioning IDs. It was such a manual process. But then even just going into Active Directory and giving permissions was not something really simple. And it seems like when you can simplify things, you make security easier. If you take a lot of the guesswork out of it, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do it, then I think you're going to kind of reduce some of your risks.
And that's also another shift that's happened, is the tolerance for manual work has gone down significantly. People are always looking to automate themselves out of the manual work. And I think that's an amazing thing that's happening in the world, right? That frees up all of our time, all these amazing human beings that could do incredible stuff from doing the manual day-to-day work. And all these jobs, I was speaking to a company yesterday, that their HRMS isn't integrated with their identity provider. And so when HR hires someone manually goes in IT and creates the user inside Active Directory. And I'm like, you guys realize that the two have like a sync. It's like a button that you have to press and then it pushes the users. And they're like, what? Really? I didn't know that. And it's like these simple things that like all of a sudden you free up, they're hiring almost 10 people a week. You free up a person, you free up like to do other stuff. And I think the thirst or hunger for companies to be more efficient, especially in these days, to be more efficient, to utilize their manpower in the right way, put their chips on the right areas. Again, just makes emphasize the importance of automation.
So this has been kind of a hot topic. So how do you feel about the passwordless authentication? Do you feel like solutions like yours are just going to help accelerate that process?
Well, first of all, let me start by saying amazing. Like the fact that I still have to remember passwords is so 1997. As like, so it's definitely something that's something to be super excited about. Just another example of how the stack is going to be totally shifted and changed in 10 years, and how we interact with our tools around us and our computers. Biometric authentication, obviously a lot of work in the space. Just to be very clear, kind of authentication, authorization, I think are two very siloed issues that are tackled separately. And that's very much on the authentication, right? It's like, what is the right way or is most the most secure way to authenticate into your system? And that's where MFA comes in and all these other things. I think when you take a dynamic authorization model, you can now, for example, instead of using buzzwords, I'll give concrete examples. I want to control who can access which tables inside MongoDB. Great. That's a permission. That's an authorization issue. Like, who is authorized to access which resources? That's a policy that you can define. The other side of that is maybe you want to invoke an authentication because you want a person to re-authenticate. You want them to prove that they're actually the right person, that it's not, they're not compromised. No one stole their session. No one stole their cookie. Like all these attacks that were rampant over the last 10 years, all of a sudden won't be available because now when you want to request, you want to access something that's very sensitive, I need to re-authenticate. I need to prove again that I am Ron and I can actually, I'm authorized to access this resource. And it's not a password that I copied or, you know, saw from, fell from a truck. You guys use that, we used to say, like when you want to say you got something and you don't want to disclose where you got it from, it's like it fell off a truck.
Yeah, I've heard that term used a lot. So yeah, really, really enjoyed this discussion. Appreciate you joining. Is there anything you'd like to mention before we close out the episode?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Really enjoyed our session today. Specifically, Black Hat, would love to either meet you at our booth or meet for coffee. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn, Ron Neesom, the CEO of Entitle. And thank you, Phil.
Oh, thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to The Philip Wiley Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, to learn more about Philip, go to thehackermaker.com and connect with him on LinkedIn and Twitter @Philip Wiley. Until next time.